if I'm able to put in 125, 150, because I'm targeting that for my tax break. But I have a benefit here of I'm putting that in, chunk of money in every single year for, say, 7 years. How much am I going to accumulate? And I think that's the other hidden benefit of doing this is you're able to sock away a lot of money.
It's often the little things, small behaviors that can change our lives. That's the power of a financial edge. I'm Ed Meek. I'm a financial advisor with a passion to help you retire early, save more, and live better. Welcome to Ed's Edge, the podcast to help you live the life you've always wanted.
Using an actuary. Before we get to talking about what an actuary is, quiz for you.
Okay.
Baseball. Think about, there's one position in baseball, I think, that when you're on the field, what do we have to have? What position has to be there?
Well, I'd say a pitcher.
That's right.
Pitchers got to throw in the ball.
That's right. Every other position, I think you probably, it would stink if you didn't have a catcher, right?
Yeah, go to the backstop.
But the pitcher could pitch and then somebody else could go run after, right?
True.
Today, we're going to bring on the person we essentially need that is the most important piece when it comes to using defined benefit plans,
right? Yes.
Wouldn't you agree that if we didn't have the actuary, you pretty much we'd have a hard time doing this, right?
I'd be a chicken with my head cut off, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and you know, I don't know. Let's bring him on. We've got George here with Dedicated DB, also owned and connected to Future Plan. George, welcome. And would you concur with my analogy of baseball and needing a pitcher and what you guys do?
Exactly. The operation of a defined benefit plan is very complex, and you use the term actuary. It's based on actuarial calculations and assumptions. So, yes, it's not a do-it-yourself plan for sure.
Yeah, George, we are blessed to have you and your team help us with all the clients that, you know, have set up these plans for their businesses. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and the company, what your role is and how you help those clients?
Yeah, I have been in the retirement savings industry or world for about 25 years myself. I've been with Dedicated DB for about 5 years. Have actually worked in the with marketing defined benefit plans for about 10 years. Dedicated DB is, as you alluded, is part of Future Plan, which is an amalgamation of about 30 different pension administration firms. And our role within the organization is the administration of defined benefit plans for high earning self-employed individuals. Examples of who these people might be, who our clients might be, consultants, real estate agents, physicians that have a side practice doing consulting. Some interesting cases I get, farmers. I got one just the other day. It was a farmer retiring, selling off grain over three years. Going to have a lot of income, no employees. It's amazing the people you come in contact with in this role, and the entrepreneurs that you come in contact, and how they make their money, and how we can help them keep their money.
That's great. Why don't you just explain? We have some other podcasts we've done that go into super detail about defined benefit plans, but why don't you just explain briefly what one is and why someone might want to establish it.
But to explain what a defined benefit plan is, I like to start with what the other broad type of qualified retirement plans are, defined contribution plans. Think 401ks, SEP IRA plans, simple IRAs. Those are defined contribution, meaning that the plan design, the plan document, and the rules define what the contribution can be, and it cannot be above certain specified limits. Currently, it's $69,000 for most people. Could be higher if you're age 50 or over. But at the end of the day, you can't get beyond those limits, no matter how much money you make, how old you are. Defined benefit plans, we talk more in terms of a pension benefit at retirement, a hypothetical lifetime pension starting at normal retirement age for your life expectancy according to IRS tables. Think of the old, not old, but the corporate pension plans that used to be widely available to employees. Well, corporations got away from those because people are living too long. They can't afford to pay out those pensions for so many years. You know, people now living into their 80s and 90s. What we do, we turn those plan designs, we turn it on its head, so to speak. We can use the same plan design, the same rules and calculations that the government and the IRS provide for us to leverage much higher contributions and tax deductions for hiring individuals, and particularly those in more mature areas of their careers. Typically, people in their 40s, 50s, 60s, possibly even older, and sometimes even individuals in their 30s that are making or generating a lot of revenue and a high income. The way these work, if we're talking about funding a pension benefit for an individual starting at age 62, that let's say it's $150,000 a year, and the client is already in their 50s, they only have a few years to put the money aside to fund this pension benefit that's going to be there for them for the rest of their life. So the rules say you need to contribute $100,000 a year, $150,000 a year, maybe more. So with these plans, for the right client, we can leverage very large contributions that are fully tax deductible and help them save and keep more of their money and not send it to the IRS. I talk in terms of a pension benefit, like a monthly stream of income or annual stream of income. None of our clients ever actually turn these into a pension while they're working with us. We're using these provisions, these rules in the tax code to leverage these higher contributions. But ultimately, once they retire, sell their business, or otherwise no longer need the plan, we terminate the plan and the assets are rolled over tax-free, tax-deferred to an individual retirement account.
Makes sense. You know, I appreciate you sharing that insight. And so really what I'm hearing as you explain all that in summary is, you know, why would someone want to create these plans? As you mentioned, the 401ks and the defined contribution plans, they cap you on how much you can contribute. Here, because the cap is on the back end, you know, how much you have to have, the maximum amount you can have in the back end. If you have a short-term time frame in getting there, you know, 5 to 10 years only, this can allow you, I use the word, you can stuff it. You can really put in hundreds of thousands of dollars, and that's the big attractive part for why someone would want to do this, is they could, not only can they put that in and speed up their retirement accounts, you know, by stuffing it, but they get that tax deduction. So, much appreciate you sharing. What you've done for us is you've really been the compliance part, the operations of it all. You make sure it's kosher in the eyes of the IRS so that the client can feel at peace that this is working the way it's supposed to be working.
Yeah. There's an example of someone that, we haven't set one up yet, but he just mentioned to me a situation that now we might be able to set one up for him and stuff it. So we have this client who makes a really good income and he's starting to consider using it for just the income. He's making over $400,000 a year and he's my age. He's 55 years old. But he next year may highly likely have a big monetization of a stock in a private company he has. And when that happens, it could be $1 million or $2 million he receives in income. Now, he can't necessarily put that in a defined benefit plan, but he hasn't been able to put his $400,000 a year of income in. So what we might do if he continues to make that kind of income is, and sometimes we try to get creative with these plans. If somebody makes a lot of money, they could put maybe a lot of that money in there, but then they go, oh, well, what am I going to spend money on? Well, in this scenario, if he gets that event, he'll have a lot of money here over in another pot. And so we kind of rob from Peter and pay Paul, where we say, well, let's live off of some of this and let's stuff a bunch of what your income is in this in order to take advantage. But as you know, George, you do have to do these. You can't just do it in 1 year, right? I mean, what are some of the parameters that people have to adhere to in order to make sure that this plan is in compliance and they do it for a certain period of time?
Glad you brought that up. There is an industry rule of thumb that the IRS likes to see these plans funded for a minimum of 3 to 5 years. That's kind of a fuzzy number. And as I said, it's a rule of thumb based on many years of experience in administering these plans and working with the IRS. So that said, consider it in most cases, at least a 3 year minimum funding requirement, after which you can feel free to terminate the plan. And as I said before, roll the assets over to an IRA, but you're not locked into what you start with in the first year. Say we design a plan around maybe $150,000 annual contribution. And in the future, a few years down the road, you find, that your business revenue is going to be trailing off some, we can do a plan amendment to change the plan design to target a lower contribution. There's the possibility of freezing the plan for a year or more, where virtually almost no contributions are required. So it's it's a type of plan that can get you large contributions. It's 6-digit figures in most cases, but there is a certain minimum funding time period, but again, definitely not locked into what you start with in the first year.
I think that's one of the biggest takeaways. You know, I would say the most common question Ed and I receive from people that are intrigued by this plan and how it can benefit them is, what am I committing myself to? What am I locked into? And they read about it online, they go to Google and define benefit plans. When they hear pension, they hear fixed, and I'm committing for a long period of time. And yes, there are these rules, as you had mentioned, George, but they wear all the hats. And so due to that, what we want to communicate, and you've done a great job educating our clients when they talk to you about this, is how flexible it truly can be. And that's something I think, depending on everyone's situation, remember, it can be flexible. And if you're curious, talk to us, talk to George to learn specifically about your situation, how flexible it truly can be.
Now that, you know, we've kind of covered those bases, George, let's create an example. You know, James and I come up with, people that, you know, someone who's interested in this, and then we come to you. Can you give us kind of like walk us through the process, a step-by-step, you know, what happens, just kind of help these people understand, you know, how it looks and what can they expect if they do this?
You know, the first part of the process is to understand the client's business, you know, what their outlook is. Do you anticipate this business continuing for 3 years or 10 years? And that can help us design the plan accordingly to either really stuff it, as the term you use, as much as possible in the minimum 3 years, or to make it the funding period last longer, maybe lower contributions, but maybe be able to fund it over a 10-year period. And I guess one of the first questions I want to know about a client beyond their age and how much they're making is, what size tax deduction are you looking for?
It's a big one.
If they need $100,000 tax deduction roughly, well, we want to try to target contributions in the range of $100,000. And there are different levers, you might say, that can be pushed or pulled in the plan design when we're setting it up to satisfy, you know, all these needs. again, you know, how much of the tax deduction and how can we make the plan last 10 years if that's your outlook, or maybe a much shorter time period, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years. We like to, you know, have a conversation with the advisor and the client, even the CPA, if possible. We like all, you know, these are all interested parties in making the plan work for the client as well as possible.
Yeah, I think that's a great starting point. So, you know, when clients come to us, that's why they come to us, is they're looking for the appropriate tax deduction. They're tired of paying the IRS, you know, a substantial amount in taxes. And so that's, you've, what I love to hear about that and what you've explained to our clients is you back into that tax deduction. That's the variable we're trying to solve for. How do, what levers do we pull to get to that annual number that the person's trying to accomplish? And then for us as advisors, being on the investment side, what we like to show is, you know, what that looks like in your retirement future. You know, if I'm able to put in 125, 150, because I'm targeting that for my tax break, but I have a benefit here of I'm putting that in, chunk of money in every single year for, say, 7 years, how much am I going to accumulate? And I think that's the other hidden benefit of doing this, is you're able to sock away a lot of money.
Well, and we've said this before when we talk about these defined benefit plans, is that it's not just the initial tax benefit, which is huge. I mean, that's why people are doing this. You know, sometimes they are targeting a certain deduction. And if they have the flexibility, they might just say sometimes as much as I can.
Yeah.
Know, right. So either way, if they're saving tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands in taxes every single year, that money is no longer in Uncle Sam's pocket. That money is now in your pocket, and that money is being invested in compounding and growing. And that's why we keep saying, you know, some of our clients retire 1, 2, 3 years earlier than they could have because they're doing these plans.
And we've gotten some questions, George, would love to hear your take on this too as you run this analysis, but we've gotten questions of, yes, but this money is growing tax deferred. The bills do eventually, right? So it's not like I'm getting all this money for free. I'm deferring it. But when we talk to our clients' financial situation, typically, you know, when you earn a lot of money, you're in a high income bracket, 37% plus your state income tax, if you have one. And compare that with when I'm retired, I might have other sources of income, some that may be taxed, some maybe not. Odds are I'm going to be in a lower tax bracket. Even if I'm not, I get more money today instead of later, you know, having to wait. So those are some of the tax benefits in doing this. And again, we run those analysis for you. So anything else to share on that tax front, since that's such a big topic, George?
Yeah, well, I've heard some tax advisors suggest that, you know, once you can get these large sums into the qualified plans world, they suggest their clients maybe systematically convert some of that to Roth IRA money over time. You know, I say systematically, I think the idea is to not to push yourself into a higher tax bracket when you do that. But ultimately, if you can get these large sums into Roth status, then it's not subject to required minimum distributions down the road. So it's a great tool for getting, you hear the term backdoor Roth IRA, backdoor Roth 401k. This is that on steroids, because much larger.
You were doing a great job of kind of starting off and going through the steps in the process. Once you've kind of received all that information and you now kind of know the lay of the land, someone says, all right, George, let's do this. Or if I want to do this, what's next? What happens next?
The next step is we have what we call a plan design questionnaire. It's a fairly simple form to gather information about the client, the business structure, and a few other things, their compensation history, current compensation. We then do the final plan design. It goes to the back office where the consultants and the plan design, the actuaries, create the IRS-approved plan document. that will really, it creates that, when that is executed, that creates the plan. The plan exists. It is a defined benefit plan. And then the investment account can be set up and funding can be done. That usually, it's usually a 2 to 3 week turnaround time for us. And everything goes out electronically by email and DocuSign. We don't ask for any money up front. We only bill after the plan's set up and the client has accepted it and executed the documents. Once that's complete, then funding can be done.
Yeah, no, appreciate you sharing that. And one of the nice parts that I've experienced directly with you and your company is the fact that clients can see a proposal on what those numbers would look like before the commitment. They want to see, hey, what is the benefit for me in dollars and cents before I actually commit to doing this? And then, of course, it's pretty easy to set up from your point of view. You set up a tax ID for their business. This is a business tax deduction. So you do all the work behind the scenes. They don't have to. And then we get involved for the paperwork and setting up the account. So it's pretty clean and simple. I'd say the process takes about a month or so from start to finish. It can be sooner if you want to get going. But that's a typical time frame to expect.
And if you're watching this and it's not December and you're interested, let's act on this or act on this, because George, he unfortunately knows December hits, everybody's coming at him. They all need to get this done. And there's just no way to take care of it when people wait too long. So do not do that in this scenario, because when you get it established, you still have to establish it the year. Like, there's certain things you have to do that year. Now, you can contribute to it later on before you file taxes in the following year, but just keep that in mind. So, George, we've got the thing set up now. You've done a great job of explaining all the whole thing set up. People that you've helped figure out with clients how much money is going to be put in. Then what happens in the following years?
Each year, first of all, every plan has a consultant assigned to it, a person whose name you know, you have their email address and their direct phone number. In the first year, there's one person that handles all first year plans, and then it gets transferred to another person for the remainder of the life of the plan. But each year, we reach out after year end with an RFI, request for information, asking for various information about the business over the previous year. You know, ask for a copy of the W-2 if they're a corporation, or see if they're a sole proprietor. All the information we need to do our annual calculations. In the first year, it's pretty straightforward about what the contribution is going to be. It's got to be the number we came up in that first year in the plan design. After that, we start giving the client a range of contributions. On the high end, what they can put in if it was a very profitable year and they need the largest possible deduction. On the low end, the minimum amount they need to contribute to keep it properly funded according to IRS guidelines. So, and these calculations are all based on the investment performance of the prior year, how much they contributed on the prior year and on what dates, many, many inputs and variables that affect those numbers. We provide a contribution letter that gives that client those range of contributions they can choose from. And they work with their advisor and their CPA to decide on what to do and make that contribution.
Yeah, I think that's key, sharing that on the annual basis, is there's a range of contributions, example being $140,000 to $200,000 as an example.
And right, so right.
What we work with the client on is deciding, hey, if you had a good year, you can go all the way up to $200,000. If you want to limit it because the year wasn't as great, maybe we target more that 140. And as you mentioned before, if that becomes a problem where that range, we can't fit the numbers for that given year in that range, then we consider amending it or things of that nature. So again, the flexibility comes into play there.
That's great. That's super helpful, George. So we got the plans established. You initially, the first year, get them funded the way that you want. Then each year, there's this flexibility. There's these ranges. And this is why George and the company that he works at are so important, and they're necessary, is because they're the ones that help you figure all of this stuff out. You know, we're the quarterback of kind of the relationship and the situation, and we manage, you know, this along with all these other things, but we need that company, a company like Dedicated DB, to be able to figure all of this stuff out. It's just not something you can do on your own. It's very, very difficult.
I'm a math and finance major. I love numbers. George and his team puts me to shame on how these things were actually work numbers wise. So definitely a must to use Actuary, and George and his team has been great. So thanks so much for sharing everything, George.
In the end, what are some like frequently asked questions that you get about these?
How are the assets invested in the plan? These plans have a conservative rate of return assumption around 5.5%. We suggest, while we don't give investment advice or manage investments or get compensated from the investments, we do suggest that the assets be invested in a portfolio designed to roughly track that rate of return, you know, 5.5 to 7.5% maybe. You can certainly be more aggressive, but I would like, we would suggest that clients avoid an aggressive and possibly volatile portfolio. If you outperform that rate of return by a wide margin for a number of years, that's going to reduce your future contributions that you can put in because the plan's getting funded more quickly. That may not be a very bad thing because you've got more money, but you don't want to get too far ahead of the funding because that can trigger some penalties if you get an overfunded plan. Conversely, if you have a volatile portfolio and you underperform for a number of years, that can require larger contributions than you were planning on to keep it properly funded in future years. So I think the takeaway is volatility is not your friend with these plans, and keep that in mind.
Well said. Yes, especially on that downside. If we underperform and we have a substantially higher contribution than we plan, that's what we don't like. So
yeah.
Stay in the line.
I like to be able to control it as much as possible. And that's one way of doing it.
Yep. Yep. Well, wonderful. That is all the time we have today. We'd love to talk more. There's many more intricate details about this. George, if someone wants to contact you directly, how would they do so?
They can call us at 866-269-2706 or email george.clarkson@dedicated-db.com.
Yeah, we'll put that in the show notes too. And two last quick questions. One is approximately how much does it cost with your company to get set up and then ongoing after that? And again, this is... What date do we got here? September 26th, 2024. You know, people do raise their fees eventually. So, you know, if you're watching this much later, they could be slightly higher. But what's the cost on that?
Set up the initial consultation, plan design, preparing the plan documents, $1,500. Annual administration for a owner-only plan with just one participant, $2,350. These are also tax deductible for the business. Both apply in the first year because we're doing, even if we start a plan now, we're doing for the annual administration, we're doing the same work we would do if the client came to us this past January. Upon termination of the plan, there is a termination fee of $1,500. There's a whole lot of work that has to be done to wind the plan down and do all the final reporting.
So year one's the most, up to $4,000, somewhere in that range. And then, you know, $2,350 or so for that owner only each and every year. And so helps with someone understanding what they're getting into and how does that compare with all the benefits they're getting.
Yeah, so that's the last work question I have for you, George. I do have a... Do you like dessert, George?
I sure do.
Okay.
Who doesn't?
Well, there's very few people.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. Well, you have to understand, George, that this may be, it depends on how good the podcasts are from time to time, may be the most important point of the podcast. It may not be, but it's my favorite part of the podcast. So this is a section that we have right in the end called Ed's Food for Thought. I love food. I love making food. I love going out to eat and eating delicious meals. And so It is time for Ed's Food for Thought and for me to share a dessert idea. And so, do you like ice cream, George?
I do.
All right. Well, I have a recipe, not for ice cream, but for the best hot chocolate sauce to put on ice cream. And I'm going to have to credit my mother-in-law for this. She's been making it ever since. I've been married nearly 33 years, so I've known them for, 33 and a half years. She's been making it, and I had never asked for the recipe until about 2 years ago, and I started making it now, and it's kind of interesting. So it's a delicious sauce. I'm going to put it on there. It's actually relatively easy.
Is it chocolate?
It's chocolate, yeah.
Okay.
So it's a chocolate sauce, and there's now, I've created two ways to be able to make it. One is you use non-sweetened chocolate, milk chocolate. That's what she uses, and that's what everybody normally has been used to, and we all love it. It's incredible. Well, I decided one time when I was at the store to buy Ghirardelli's chocolate, similar. Right.
Look out.
And so I've now made it with that. And I made it one time when she was there.
Uh-oh.
And I was like, KB, you know, her name's KB. KB, what do you think? And she's like, oh yeah, it's good. But I could kind of tell she was thinking, it's not as good as mine. And I'm not going to say who, but behind her, somebody was nodding to me and then told me later, you know, if you want decadent, you got to do the Ghirardelli's. If you want regular, which is awesome, they're both really good. It really depends on what you want at the time. But I'm going to put it on there. It's super easy to make. You need a double broiler usually to make it a little bit easier. But we will send you the recipe, George, and you or somebody else can give it a try. It's great.
Love it. Love it. Always like chocolate sauce on my ice cream. Sure.
Oh, can't miss it. Thanks for sharing that. We get you part A and part B, two different forms of that recipe as well.
Yeah, right. Two versions. Thanks, George. We really appreciate it.
This podcast represents an assessment of the market environment at a specific point in time, should not be relied upon as investment advice, and is not intended to predict or depict performance of any investment. Any specific recommendations or comparisons that are made as to particular securities or strategies are for illustrative purposes only and are not meant as investment advice for any viewer.